Front Seat Live podcast happily presents My Year of Healing the Hustle podcast, where I, Jessica Butts, psychotherapist, 2.5-time author, corporate trainer, and Myers-Briggs expert, share my raw, vulnerable, honest, and in-the-moment experiences of my journey to heal the hustle. I recently put my money where my mouth was, and I sold everything I owned and moved to Maui with 5 suitcases to explore this healing island. What has come up is a mountain of real life healing the hustle experiences I hope you can see yourself in, so you can also heal your hustle while still being unapologetically who you are. Let's get started. I am very excited about today's episode for a couple of reasons. One, it's my birthday, and I know as we get older, it shouldn't be such a big deal, but my family has always really been into birthdays. Like, and I'm one of those people, I don't celebrate my birthday all month. I'm not into that. Like, my birthday, so 7-7, the day that this comes out, so I was born at 7-7-73, so I'll be 49. I don't know. I've heard people say that when you get like past 35, you just continue to feel 35. I absolutely feel that way. I don't necessarily look like I'm 35 anymore, but I absolutely feel that way. So I have no idea how I got to be 49 years old. I'm way too immature to still be 49. I'm a very playful soul. I'm a very playful person. So to be 49 every once in a while, I'm like, should I be acting different? And obviously I'm kidding because I don't believe in rules whatsoever. But today is a special episode because it is my 49th birthday. My family has always believed in celebrating birthdays. Again, I'm not a big, like, even the day before and the day after, it's like, it's not my birthday. It's just one day. It's just one day that's super, super important to me. My family has always made it a really big deal. I hope you're someone that your family has made your birthday a big deal. It's like the one day where we really, really get to celebrate each individual person for their wonderful contribution on this planet. And I think it's fun that I get an opportunity to do a podcast today for you on my birthday. So as I have divulged in previous episodes, this Healing the Hustle series is very in the moment, real. I am not recording weeks and weeks out. I am literally recording the week of, because as this journey of healing my own hustle is unfolding, it's something that I feel like I need to share in the moment with you. So I'm recording on Tuesday, the day before, 2 days before my birthday on July 5th. And I've been thinking about this episode a lot, and it's going to divert from just the Healing the Hustle content, because I was having a conversation recently with somebody in my life about how well do you know yourself? And their answer was whatever their answer was, but my answer is probably an A-. There's always room for improvement. I don't believe we're an A+ at anything, because there's always some improvement. I will be doing personal development and self-improvement for sure until the day I die. I mean, if I am lucky to live a very, very long life, I will be doing this shit until the day I die, because I just always believe in forward momentum and thinking into the future and being the best version of ourselves. So that will always be happening. But I will say I'm probably an A-, possibly even an A. So today's episode is my 5 favorite personal development tools as a therapist, as just somebody who is adamantly for personal development, for self-improvement, for all of that. And again, it really made me think about my favorite tools, which I'll be honest, were very, very, very easy. I could have done 10, I could have done 3, but 5 came to my mind very easily. So today's episode, I want you to be thinking about How well do you know yourself, with this caveat? Just because I know myself really, really well doesn't mean I'm perfect. I am just as fucked up as everybody else. I have just as much trauma. I have just as much family of origin bullshit. I have just as much pain as everybody else, but I know it. I know the good about myself, and I also know my not so good. Like, I know, if we're going to talk about it, edges, like, I know my edges, but I just like to say, like, this is why I'm fucked up. This is why I have trust issues. This is why I need certain things. This is why I'm traumatized by certain things. We just have to know. So it doesn't mean because I'm an A minus, I'm better than other people. It simply means when I step into a new client, I know my triggers so that I can do better work with them. When I go visit my mom for a couple of days and I get triggered by her, I know the tools I need to take care of myself. When I step into a new relationship with somebody, I know how to communicate who I am, what my needs are. When I've been in a relationship for many years, I know why I'm anxiously attached. I can talk about why I'm acting a certain way. So again, it doesn't mean I'm perfect all the time by any stretch of the imagination, but it means I can communicate it with someone who is willing to be in it with me. My sister and I she's my very best friend, an amazing human being. And we've been having a lot of conversations about this, that she and I are continuing to be on this personal development journey. And again, it doesn't mean we've got it all figured out. It just means we're way more self-aware of why we're fucked up and how that comes into a relationship. And so at 49 years old today, on Thursday, but on the day that this is going live, I know myself really, really, really well. And it allows me to cut things off much easier. It allows me to set boundaries in my life much, much easier. It allows me to know what I want, who I want, what I'm willing to put up with, what I'm not willing to put up with in all aspects of my life, right? In friendships and relationships and work life. And that's why I wanted to do this episode. These five things could be, first of all, an entire episode on their own. They have been entire episodes on their own, but I am going to really try very, very hard to do them some justice in about 5 minutes each. So please know that this is a massive high level 50,000 foot overview of some of the most amazing personal development tools that I've ever used in my life. My practice is currently full at the moment, but you know, people graduate. And so if this is stuff that you are like wanting to dig into deeper on a personal one-on-one level, please always just send me an email or a DM and, you know, we can put you on the wait list and get you in. Cause these are the five things that have absolutely changed my life, have made me a better person, have made me unbelievably more self-aware. So when this shit comes up, I can just talk about it again and just say, like, this is what's coming up for me. So the five favorite personal development tools on my 49th birthday are, I'm going to give them to you all, and then I will let you know, obviously we'll go through them. So number one, I mean, come on, you guys are going to guess. You have to guess. So number one personality type, duh. Absolutely. Myers-Briggs personality type, knowing this about yourself and others is an absolute game changer. Number two is codependency. That's probably not a huge surprise to my listeners either. Number three is attachment theory or adult attachment theory. I will be going through that. Number four, good old love languages. I mean, people think it's fluffy and everyone's talking about it. That shit is powerful for a lot of reasons. And I'm going to share a personal story with you about why these are so important and to not just brush over them and act like they're not a big deal. And last but not least is core values. It's something that I learned a couple years into being a therapist, and I've used this tool many, many, many times since. In fact, I've got a freebie somewhere. If I can figure that out by Thursday, I'll put it in the show notes for you to use your own, to do your own core values. It's a little cutout exercise of, I think, 42 different core values. Absolutely, absolutely fascinating. Okay. All right, loves. Let's talk about personality types. So obviously, this has to be my number one. This is my entire foundation of my business. It's the one thing that I can talk about literally for the rest of my life. On my deathbed, I will probably be typing my nurse be asking them things like, what's your personality type? How do you take in information? So let's start with that. And again, I'm going to watch the clock because I can obviously get off on a massive tangent here. I'm going to attempt to do all of these in 5 minutes-ish. So number one personality type. Let's talk about the four dichotomies quickly. Each of these dichotomies is in and of themselves absolutely fascinating. But then when you start combining them together, that really is the brilliance of Myers-Briggs. That is the brilliance of personality type. It's like going under the water level. Like if you think about it as an iceberg, the four things that we're about to talk about are the tip of the iceberg. And then underneath the water is all of the diversity of understanding so much more than introversion and extroversion. Like when I ask people their type and they're like, oh, I'm an introvert. I'm like, that's like one itty bitty part of type. There's so much more. So again, the four are our source of energy, where we get our best energy and where we give our best energy. And that is introversion and extroversion. It's not how loud you are. It's not how social you are. It's about your energy. Introverts get and give their best energy to themselves and those that they are very, very close to. Extroverts, on the other hand, get their best energy by giving it to other people, as well as get their energy from being around a lot of people. You know, there's so many people out there talking about this. I'm so embarrassed to admit this, but I was watching Love Island the other day. It's so my guilty pleasure. All that bullshit is like The Bachelor and Love Island. It's just my tune out thing other than reading. So anyway, I was watching Love Island the other day and they were talking about, they were like, oh, I'm both too. Oh, I'm an introvert and an extrovert. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Let me clarify this. Yes, we are technically both because our front seat is an introvert and an extrovert. And so 80% of the time we are split 50-50 between our introvertedness and our extrovertedness. For example, I'm an ENFJ. My front seat is an extroverted feeler. I talked a lot about this last week in the podcast about part of why I'm home for home. I'm back in Seattle. I still haven't quite transferred home back to home. It's a little confusing where home is. Home is Maui, but I keep calling Seattle that. So back in Seattle, this is part of why I'm back, is that this is a huge, huge, huge part of who I am as an extroverted feeler. I love relationships. I love my friends. It brings me so much joy. It really fills me up. That is my extroverted self. That is my driver. It is the best self. But it's only 50% of my front seat. The other is an introverted intuition. In fact, I have a group program that I've been with these people almost 2 years. And we had a call the other day and somebody asked about their front seat. And then everybody on the call wanted to do their front seat. And I was like, it's such a reminder that even though I know this so well, other people, this isn't like your zone of genius. This isn't what you talk about all the time. So this is a good reminder. So if you go to my website at jessicabutts.com, under the book tab, all of these are listed. All of your types are listed, or you can go take my quiz, which is at jessicabutts.com as well. In fact, that's probably a better place. Take the quiz, and then it will tell you what your front seat and your back seat are so that you know what your two people in the front seat are. And so again, my second best self is an introverted intuitive. And those two parts of me, It's only half of me is being extroverted. The other half is being quiet. It's being alone. It's being in Maui by myself. It's creating. It's writing this book. It's doing this podcast. It's dreaming. It's what's next for my life. And am I going to go to Malaga? Where will I live next? And what am I going to do next? That is a huge, huge part of me. And so when people say they're both, we're not necessarily like ambiverts. It's very important to understand what is extroverted of you and what is introverted of you so that you also know how to show up as your best self. So, wow, I'm already, oh, that was 5 minutes. Shit. I told you this was going to be really hard. Okay, I'm going to move on. Look, that was 5 minutes and I've only talked about one. Okay, I'm going to move on. So sensing and intuition is the second dichotomy. And this is all about how we take in information. And I've talked about this. I mean, this is how I built my business, not just on Myers-Briggs, but really specifically helping intuitive types in particular, because this is what has defined my life. I grew up with all sensors, my sister, my mom, I married one. My husband for 20 freaking years was a strong S. My dad is an S. They all live in, you know, very structured lives. And then I'm this freak. I'm this like, what am I going to do next? And where am I going to go? And I spent some time yesterday with my, for the 4th of July with my cousin, Alex, and he was like my brother growing up, and I hadn't seen him in 18 years. And he showed up yesterday as a surprise for me. It was such an amazing surprise. And spending time with him yesterday, it was just so funny because I was like, oh, we're so alike. We're so alike. This is why we were so close when we were younger. He was a couple years older than me, still is a couple years older than me, but it was just so kind of refreshing. But to look at somebody, spend time with somebody that is like me. He's like the male version of me, and watching him like, I don't know what's next and I'm going to do this and I could go do this. And I was like, oh my God, this is like watching me. And so intuitives are all about what if. They're all about possibilities. It's always looking into the future. It's always what's next. And sensors are very in the moment. They are very in the moment, living in the moment, touch it, taste it, hear it, smell it, see it. It is a fact. So it's such a huge, huge, huge difference. And again, 75% of the population are S's. The world is built for S's. And so us intuitive types, this is a defining difference for us. So I'm going to keep going. Thinkers and feelers. Not going to spend a ton of time on this. It's not the most interesting of all of them, I think. This is all about how we make decisions with the information that we have taken in through our intuition or our five senses. And so to oversimplify it, thinkers make decisions with their heart. Nope. Thinkers make decisions with their heads. Feelers make decisions with their hearts. This one is dramatically skewed by gender. So 75% of men, or those who identify as male, are thinkers, and 75% of women, or those who identify as female, are feelers. And so John Gray wrote a book, you know, years ago about women are from Mars, men are from Venus, or something like that, whatever. And those are huge, huge factors in gender. And we're also attracted to our opposite until we know better. So I was, you know, just genetically, we're kind of attracted to our opposite. It's the whole bullshit of like, you complete me. But in reality, like anthropology speaking, we are kind of still attracted as cavemen and cavewomen, attracted to our opposite to help us go through life. And then I think we get older and then we realize, I really don't want to fight with someone all the time. I want somebody that I'm compatible with. And so we then seek out in this instance, somebody that is so much more like us. I think I've shared that story before, that when I got divorced, my ex-husband, we couldn't have been more different. So when I started dating, you know, after a long break of being single so that I could heal myself, and if you have not done the same, please do, I decided I'm only going to date NF men. I didn't care if they were introvert or extrovert, and I wasn't, at the time, didn't care about the J and the P. And so I dated all these NF men. It actually just happened. I completely manifested it. It was so fun. It was so fun to connect with people on a completely like woo basis, like thinking about what if, and then also heartfelt, like to not get logicked out of it. Oh my God, it was so sexy. Oh my God, I had so much fun. It was so much fun. And then I don't know what happened. I kind of stopped that streak and maybe I should get back to it. But that is, and I shared last week too, the one time, a couple times I've been very, very, very in sync with a man, was they were ENFJs. And so the older I get, the more I realize like, it's just easier. It's just more fun. And I kind of want my life easy at this age. Okay. So there's that. And I guess if we're talking about like, how well do you know yourself? This actually is a really important part of type, because I can just go out willy-nilly. You know, that's why frickin' Tinder and that shit is so ridiculous, because it's like swiping on a picture tells me absolutely nothing. It tells me I kind of want to make out with them, but it doesn't tell me anything else about them. And the ENFJ piece of it, again, just connecting even with my cousin yesterday of like, oh my God, this is just so, we're so in sync. We're so in jive with each other because we're similar type. And so knowing that about myself, going into a new relationship, how well do I know myself? I'm not changing. I mean, certainly I'm going to compromise with people, but this is who I am. Like, I'm not at this age changing myself for somebody. Like, you can love me for who I am or move the fuck along, dude. Like, that is why we need to know ourselves, so that we can, you know, have friendships, we can have clients, we can attract the right clients, we can pick the right job, we can move into the right jobs, we can date the right people for us, so the freaking life is easier, right? Like, who doesn't want to have a relationship that feels like kicking a beach ball down the beach versus pushing a boulder up a hill? Like, if shit is too hard at this stage of our lives, like, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that with a client. I'm not doing that with a friendship. I'm definitely not doing that in a relationship. Like, at this age, when we know ourselves, my friends, when we know ourselves better, we can dictate what comes into our lives instead of bringing somebody, something in, a job, a relationship, a friendship, and then having to figure it out. Like, why wouldn't we do that ahead of time? I told you this was going to be really difficult. This might have to be a two-parter. I'm not going to lie. This might have to be a two-parter. I got so much more to say. Maybe I will make this a two-parter. I'm never going to get through this. I knew this. I was like, how am I going to do this in 5 minutes? Brevity is not my gift. That is for sure. Okay. So J and P. J's and P's. This is a huge one in relationships and knowing ourselves, that as a J, this is the healing the hustle. This is the archetype for the healing the hustle. So my archetype, helping my clients for the last, you know, 11 years as a psychotherapist, has been specifically around intuitive types. I mostly see intuitive types because we're so misunderstood. We're so marginalized in our society. We're so marginalized that I end up seeing mostly intuitive types. I attract that. I help people with that because it's such an issue in our lives without even knowing it. We have been oppressed and we suppress ourselves because we don't fully know ourselves. So that has been my archetype for a very long time. And it still is my archetype that I help people with Front Seat Life. And then moving into the healing the hustle, the new archetype is really the J's and J women specifically, because we have been programmed with type, with the patriarchy, with our society, with the hustle culture, to do exactly that, to constantly need to be in control. And I personally am attempting, it's not easy, it is actual work, to be less controlling in my life. As I've shared in previous episodes, about letting Maui unfold instead of me trying to make it what I wanted it to be, letting it present itself, letting relationships unfold instead of trying to control them. And one of my new slogans, which I feel is very, very simple, but everyone I've shared it with seems to think it's as profound as I do. And I think only J types would find this profound, which is, I'm just living my life. I'm just living my life. Yeah, it makes me cry a little bit. It's so simple. But for this archetype, we are constantly trying to control things around us. Relationships, people, situations, things that we literally don't have control over, we try to control. And so I come from a lineage. My great-grandmother, my grandmother, my mother, my sister, we are all definitely J women, very strong, independent, bossy, controlling women. I personally am choosing in my life at the moment to try to be less like that. And it's actually kind of fun. I think I'm at the stage now where it's fun. I would have said probably a few months ago that it was challenging, but now I'm enjoying it because I also see it in other people, right? So I see it in my mom at times. I'm like, I don't want to be that way. I would like it to unfold and to let this unfold as it may. So that is the type. That's only number one. So I might only get through a couple of these, and then maybe I will do an episode two next week, which would be lovely because it would also lead into my 100th episode. I think this is 98. And so I could do a part two, and then I could do, my 100th episode, which might be fun. Okay. So let me keep going. Because now we're going to talk about codependency. So that's my second favorite. I guess I don't rank these. No, I do. Number one is definitely type. Number two would be codependency. Yeah, that's probably true. And then the next three might be. No, these are probably in order, actually. Okay, so next is codependency. The visual I always have for this, let me give credit where credit is due. Melody Beatty is the world's leading educator on codependency. I've read Codependency No More when I was with my husband and we were going through therapy. And I have shared the story that I read this book and I threw it across the floor because I was like, oh my God, I have that. I mean, I read the disease that is codependency. And I literally was like, I have that. I never knew it was a thing. I had never heard it before. I've told that story before that my therapist suggested that I might be codependent and I wanted to like wring her neck and tell her to fuck off and like, how dare you? And she was 100% right. And she changed my life moving forward. So this is another example of, this doesn't make me better. It just makes me more informed. I am aware of my codependency. And so this is why I'm sharing this with you guys. I want you to be more informed about yourself. I want you to know yourself better. I don't know why that's making me cry. It's just, it feels like when we know ourselves better, we get to step into relationship in a completely different way. It feels like we are leading our lives versus our lives leading us. When we know our type, when we know our codependency, when we know attachment, when we know our love languages, when we know our core values, we feel more in charge of our lives. We get to make hard decisions, right? Ending friendships, ending relationships, ending marriages, quitting jobs, moving across oceans. Like, that shit is not easy. And so this is not for those that are just skating through life. Like nobody, I think, listening to my podcast is somebody who's skating through life, because these are decisions that we are making to be the best version of ourselves. Again, this doesn't mean we got our shit all figured out. It just means we're more informed about who we are. Okay, so codependency. The visual I have from Melody Beattie's work is a tennis court. There are two people at any given time on a tennis court. My mom and I, a relationship and I, my husband and I, my sister and I, my friends and I, my clients and I, anyone I step into a relationship with or are in a relationship with, or you are in a relationship with. And there are many different forms of unhealthy relationships. Okay. The first one is in the net. You're intertwined in the net together. There is no separation. That is enmeshment. This is a lot of time unhealthy mother and daughter relationships. This is unhealthy, long-term relationships. Like people who have the same email address, like, or they share an email or they share a Facebook profile. Bros, dudes, ladies, get a fucking life. I cannot. I don't see that very often, but every once in a while you get somebody who's like Tom and Mary's Facebook page. It's like, absolutely not, people. If you don't trust your spouse enough to have their own email address or their Facebook page, you should not be married. You should not be married. So that is a big thing for me. Like, enmeshment is unhealthy. It is unhealthy. Okay. The second is detachment. This is somebody like off the tennis court. They are in the stands. They have left the arena, whatever those things are called, wherever you play tennis, arena, court, I don't know, whatever. They have left, or they're on the sidelines. As John Gottman would call this, this is stonewalling. One of his deadly horsemen, like, this is going to ruin your relationship. This could be two people that have become detached. This is unhealthy. One person, there's one person on the court potentially that's like trying to make it happen. They're chasing, they're engaging. They're trying to make it happen, right? They're in it. They're involved. They're chasing. They're, hey, how are you? Or starting the text conversation every day, or leaning in, or doing the love languages, and they're getting met with nothing in return. That is unhealthy. That person has left. That is detachment. I mean, that's a whole nother episode about like what to do about it. Today, I'm just kind of educating you on my favorite tools. Okay. So then let's talk about the other two, which are two people both on the court. So they're not enmeshed in the net and they're not detached by having left the court and stonewalling. They are both on the court. The first version of codependency is what's called a bossy leaper. This is my term, by the way. I just made this up. So that's what I do. I read stuff and then I put my own spin on it. So I always give credit where credit is due. Obviously, I did not create codependency, but my take on it is a bossy leaper. That is the person that is on their side of the net and they don't want to look at their own shit. They might be anxious. They might be angry. They might be overwhelmed. They don't want to look at their stuff. They don't want to go to therapy. They don't want to look at it. So what do? They abandon their side of the net. So you could think about the side of the court as being who they are. They have abandoned that and jumped on the other side of the net, and they are managing and controlling the other person, telling them what to wear, telling them you need to be here when, this is how you fucking load the dishwasher, this is the right way to do this. This is, shut up. You know these people, right? They, oh my God, they make me crazy. They make me crazy. This is how you need to do this. This is how you need to make a salad. This is like, is this really how you want to spend your life? Managing and controlling other people. Like, it doesn't fucking matter how you load the dishwasher. Just let somebody be who they are. Let me say, this is somebody that you have lost trust. So somebody that is trying to do that has lost self-trust. There is a obsession about needing to manage and control details that don't fucking matter. It doesn't matter. If there's still food on a dish, is that really what you want to worry about for the rest of your life? Who fucking cares? We got to pick our battles. We got to, specifically for women, we have to pick our battles. So a lot of J women are bossy leapers. Let me say that again. A lot of J women are bossy leapers. Ironically, I am not. This is not mutually exclusive, meaning your type does not necessarily dictate your codependent style, because codependency is a learned behavior. Your personality type is innate. I'm going to say that again as well. Your personality type is innate. You were born with your type. Your codependent style is a learned behavior. So while I am a bossy, controlling type J person, a J personality type, I am not a bossy leaper, because I was married for 20 years to an addict and a bossy leaper and an ESTJ. So somebody who tried to manage and control me for 20 fucking years. Also, I love you, Mom, but my mom is a very bossy, controlling person. So my entire upbringing was, I mean, from there until I met my husband at 20, I have been managed and controlled. I've been told, you know, who to be, what to do. That's not acceptable. You're too loud. That's too much. Don't do that. So I am not a bossy leaper. I am the other one, which is called a doormat. As a doormat, what we allow to happen is for people to jump on our side of the net and manage and control us. We are people pleasers. We don't want to rock the boat. So I'm just going to get really real that this is a learned behavior. And I learned at a young age to not rock the boat in my family. Again, I love my mom very much. We've worked through a lot of our issues, but as a single mom, she had a lot on her plate. And so she was very controlling, and I learned to not upset her by not rocking the boat. So I learned at a very young age to just shut the fuck up and do what was told. I mean, even at, you know, 16 or whatever, I've told that story of like, I'm ASB president and I got to go run a meeting, and it's an inconvenience to my mom. And so I don't get to say anything. I had to just be late. And so I have learned, again, learned behavior versus who I really am. And at 49, I'm not putting up with any of that bullshit anymore. When we get to number five, one of my core values is to be able to be powerful. Like, that is a core value, is to be able to show up in my power and have nobody boss me around, control me, tell me what to do, because these are my wounds, people. This whole episode is to help you see yours as well. It doesn't mean it's perfection. It doesn't mean I'm even right, but I am not good at being told what to do because I grew up with that. And then I married someone who told me what to do. And so as an ESTJ, his logic and his facts always overrode my intuitive woo, my what if, right? Facts always override that. Well, here are the facts. Let me get out the, you know, my sister and I always joke, from a revenue standpoint, like, fuck that. Don't minimize. Do not tell me that my intuition, that my woo-ness, that my creativity is less valuable than your facts. But that's what happens in our society. Thinkers, logics, let me show you the facts. I don't give a fuck about your facts. I literally don't give a fuck about your facts. My intuition and my gut feeling and my heart is never wrong, ever. It's never been wrong. And so you can over-logic me, you can show me facts, you can give me data, and I don't care. But again, in our society, that bossy leaper, that personality type will jump on our side of the net and try to manage and control us and make us not feel valuable. And so as a learned behavior at 49 years old, I am still in recovery. That is part of codependency, is once codependent, always codependent. So I was in Al-Anon, obviously, for years because my husband was an addict. So I lived in that world for many years. And I learned that this is something that is ingrained, learned behavior in me that I have to oftentimes push back on people that are trying to manage and control me. I'm doing it, you know, off and on with my family at times, that you can be in a huff right now. I am not going to participate in that. You can freak the fuck out about a schedule. I am not going to do that right now. I'm going to just be over here in my own zone. Or someone trying to manage and control me in any way is not going to fly anymore, because I've been doing it. I mean, I did it for 40 years. I did it for 40 years. So I get triggered, obviously, when that happens. So I'm going to stop there, because that's number two. That's number two. I might get through this. Maybe. Okay, let's jump into number three. All right. Number three is attachment theory, adult attachment theory. I wish I knew who did this. I could probably look it up on my phone right now, but you know, that's not who I am. So adult attachment theory, learned about this in graduate school. Obviously need to know this as a therapist. It's one of the best tools. And a lot of people don't know about this. It's not nearly as talked about as type or codependency or love languages or core values. So this is probably the least known and one of the most powerful. It's in my top three. It's probably number three for me. So attachment theory goes like this. The original, the OG version, which, you know, I learned 11 years ago in graduate school. They've, you know, since updated it a bit, but there are three kinds of attachment. So you can think of it as a grid. So do a L with your finger. And this is like a L grid. Is that what it's called? An L grid? I don't know. Anyway, in the middle of your fingers, in the bottom left, the crux of the whatever. God, I'm describing this terrible. You know what I mean, though. That is what's called secure attachment. Theorists say if their secure attachment is less than 10%. I've actually met a securely attached person before, and it was fascinating to me. And it was very eye-opening as to how they function and how, what a blessing it is, and how different most people are from that. So the theory goes like this, that we as children go out into the world, we go to school, we play, kick the can, we're doing whatever we're doing in the world. And we come home, and our primary caregivers, whoever that was for you, grandparents, mom, dad, moms, dads, whoever they were, that we come home and from playing out in the world, and we are met with securely attached would look like, if we were bad, we were punished appropriately, right? Like we weren't beaten, but we were met with appropriate punishment. And when we were good, we were rewarded or praised. And our parents were almost perfect, which is why it's less than 10%, because it's literally impossible. For any of you parents out there, you know that that is literally not possible, to never yell at your kids, to never, you know, screw them up in a way that you're yelling at them or you do the wrong thing or whatever. Okay. So that is why secure attached is very uncommon. So let me describe the other two. And it's a grid, because you can be on one axis or the other or somewhere in between. So one axis is what's called avoidantly attached. These are kids that go out in the world and they come home. This is especially true for my generation, latchkey kids, where both parents were either working or they were emotionally unavailable. So avoidant is, as a child, your parents or your primary caregivers were not there for you physically, like not home, or emotionally were unavailable. That's true for a lot of us, especially people my age or near my age. I remember watching an episode of Mad Men and realizing, oh my God, these fucked up people raised my parents. This is only one generation different. Like those kids in Mad Men are our parents. So no wonder they're not fantastic at knowing what to do with us emotionally. Like my friends that are parents now are unbelievably better parents. In fact, I think we've overcompensated a bit. Like there's a lot of helicoptering. There's a lot of overparenting going on right now. We've done an overcompensation. So probably the next generation will be even better where it's a little more even. But those were our freaking parents, those kids in Mad Men. And so they absolutely were not, a lot of them were not available to us emotionally because they had no idea how, because their parents had no idea how. Or, no, do not jump. I'm doing a podcast with my sister's dogs, and one of them's about to jump on my lap, knock my computer off, and spill my coffee. Stay. This is hysterical. This is the life of a traveling business person. Okay, back to my story. That they are, again, physically not there as well. So these are latchkey kids. So these are kids that are literally come home and there's nobody there. There's nobody there. And so what this kid learns as an adult, another learned behavior, is that nobody can take care of them. So when you get hurt or someone screws with you a little bit, you're like, fuck it, it's over. I'm done. You can't help me. You can't take care of me. You might break up with somebody. You might end a relationship. You might end a client. You're basically just like, screw it. I'll do it on my own. A lot of women are like, oh, yep, I know this feeling. Also very J women. But this is so much of like, I got this on my own, because that's what we learned as kids. I totally learned this. Both of my parents were working. I basically was the other mom for my sister. And I learned I got to make lunch. I got to make snacks. I got to take care of myself. My mom was super busy. My parents were divorced. And so I learned I got to take care of myself. This is a huge part of why I'm so independent. And that is a wound. My friend, that is a wound. So when I get into relationship and somebody triggers me, I'm like, fuck you, bro. I'm out. Again, not good. It's not good, but I know this. If you don't know this and you're acting as such, you can't pause. You can't communicate with the other person. Like, that person better want to know you as well. Like, if they don't give a shit about getting to know you, they don't want to know all the layers, they don't want to peel the onion back and get to know you, move on. Because these are the complexities of a 49-year-old woman. This is the complexities of growing up. This is the complexities of being in a marriage for 20 years. Like, we are rad, complex, awesome human beings. Don't hide that shit. Do not hide that. Do not be embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed of your codependency. Don't be embarrassed of your attachment. This is who we are. I'm not embarrassed of when I fuck up. This is who I am. Don't judge me. Don't question me. I don't want any of that. Love me for who I am or get the fuck out of my life. This is definitely going to be a two-parter. Okay, so the other axis, hi, Finn. Oh, the dog is just wanting love. I'm almost done. Finn, I see you. I love you, but you need to stay there. Do not jump over here. My sister's going to love this episode. Do not jump over here. Okay, second, and then I'm going to wrap this up. The other axis is anxious attachment. And so what this kid learned is you go out into the world. This kid goes out into the world. They come home and they don't know what they're going to get. So this could be mental illness in your primary caregiver. This could be addiction. So you come home and your mom might be high as a kite, or your dad's shit-faced on the couch. They're passed out, or they're super drunk, or they're, you know, having a bad day, or they're super depressed, or they can't get out of bed, or they're bipolar, or they're manic depressive. It's just, you never know what you're going to get. Or in my case, this was just a really, really, really busy mom. This was a very stressed out, busy mom. And so I would come home some days And I, you know, had an awesome day. I was a rad kid at school. I slaying it. I'm ASB president. I'm getting good grades. I'm like killing it at life. But if my mom had a really shit day at work, being a single mom, I sometimes was met with not a lot of love. And so I never knew what I was going to get. There was a lot of smoke and mirrors going on in my relationship with my husband. He was an addict. And so sometimes there would be all this love and praise, like, you're the best thing in the world. And then he had affairs. How fucking confusing is that, right? That is very confusing that you tell me one thing, but you say another. That is anxious attachment. That is smoke and mirrors. That is, you say you love me, but you scold me, or you say you love me, but you go have affairs. That is anxious attachment. Or being met again with alcoholism or a mental illness. And that becomes a kid who's walking on eggshells. This is also people pleasing because I'm nervous of what I'm going to get. And so this adult learns to grow up and not trust what people say to them. This is when someone says to you, I love you. I'm super interested in you. But their actions are different. This could be, I want to be with you. And then you don't hear from them for 3 days. That's anxious attachment. That is, I don't trust what you said. Anxious attachment people need constant reassurance. They can be perceived as needy. They need, again, verbal, physical reassurance. I love you every day. Text messages, checking in. How are you? I'm thinking about you. And it can seem really needy. So a securely attached person doesn't always need that. They don't need this constant validation because they learned to trust that from their parents at a very young age. Good for them. Good for them. As my sister says, the most condescending thing you can say to someone, good for you. Well, good for them. I did not grow up that way. And most of you, 90% of you also did not grow up that way. We are not securely attached. And I'm not embarrassed about that. I didn't have anything to do with it. So why would I be embarrassed? So don't fucking judge me for it either. I'm not embarrassed that I'm anxiously and avoidantly attached. By the way, the grid means you can be anywhere in there. So I'm all scattered on this grid. I have anxious attachment and avoidant attachment. There are times where I'm like, just end this. I'm going to move on. I'm going to do it myself. Why do you think I've been single so often? I just am like, fuck this. I'm out. I'm independent. I'm going to go do it on my own. But I'm also anxiously attached. I mean, I'm just, you know, whatever you want to call it. I'm awesome or I'm a mess. And because I also learned that I love you, but that's what anxious attachment feels like. Or, I never know what I'm going to get because I grew up with a mom who was super, super, super busy. I don't blame her. This is my reality. So I'm going to finish off next week because this is already at 55 minutes and I wanted it to be an awesome episode. I didn't want to just skirt over things. I didn't spend 5 minutes on each. So next week, I promise I will come back with part two, which is love languages, core values, and maybe I'll have a bonus something in there and so I can even it out. But the purpose, again, of understanding this is not striving for perfection. It is not to judge yourself or let other people judge you, to say, why are you this way? Or I don't know where this is coming from or whatever. Then ask me. If you don't know where it's coming from, then let's sit down like adults and talk about all of our wounds. Don't ever expect somebody to be perfect, and don't be with someone expects you to be perfect or expects you to be happy all the time. That is not who we are as human beings. We are complex. We are multidimensional. We are layers. And if someone doesn't like that, or you don't like that in yourself, fuck that. We got to learn to accept who we are, accept our innateness, how we were born into this world, how God designed us, and then also understanding our learned behaviors. This is stuff that we carry in our backpack. It is education, is awareness. It is stuff that we get to like come into our lives, bring with us so that we can have more understanding about ourselves and others. And at 49 years old, I got a lot of stuff to still learn. I am still growing. It's an A minus, and it may stay an A minus until the day I die. Maybe at 90, I'll move up to an A, but we'll see. But even then, I won't be an A plus. And it doesn't mean perfection. It just means awareness. All right, my friends, I would love to hear from you. As always, 5-star reviews over on iTunes are so unbelievably appreciated. I can't even tell you. I love me some Instagram messages. If you're looking to want to get on my wait list for some therapy stuff, I would be delighted to work with you there as well. I do have one spot still. I don't know whose spot it is, but there's still one spot left for the Maui retreat as well. All of this information, including the personality assessment, is always over at jessicabutts.com. Thank you so much for listening. I managed to get this in under an hour, and I will see you next week. And happy birthday to me. All right. Bye.